This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, my takeover of Place to Be Nation Wrestling is complete now because I'm hosting this takeover Portland reaction show, and here with some of my co-hosts from PTB NXT, Jacob Williams and Tim Capel. How y'all doing tonight?
Wonderful.
Excellent. I love that your takeover is complete.
Mm-hmm.
And welcome to this special edition of PTB NXT, where we have a very special guest tonight. Who is he, Jenny?
I don't know. He might challenge me for the queendom.
Might challenge my assertion of what kind of show this is, too.
Yes,
that's fun.
Yes. Justin Rosera, how are you?
That opening was as convoluted as the closing of the pay-per-view special tonight.
Starting already on your bullshit.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hi.
You're ready to fight, apparently.
Welcome.
I'm ready. And like I was saying off air, I believe there's a solid chance this is my first reaction show in PTB in history. There may have been one in the Will days, but I don't think I've had one since. So you're welcome.
How are you feeling about that?
I was looking forward to just laying on the couch and putting something on, but now I got to sit up and talk. So I feel like someone in the crowd watching the end of that main event.
Is this your brutality?
It's my ruthless aggression.
Oh, God. All right. So, let's just go then. First up, we had a little concert by Poppy, who I couldn't determine was the name of the chick or the band. She was wearing some sort of interesting outfit. Anyway, what do y'all think about Poppy there?
Did she pee on the couch and or not wash her hands?
Both. Yeah, what's the song called? I Disagree.
Fill the Crown, felt a little, I think was one.
Yeah.
It's on the subtitle for this podcast tonight. I Disagree.
That'll be the recurring theme, it sounds like. But yeah, sort of low energy for a wrestling show. It kind of got a polite applause at the end because this is a crowd that seems a little bit starved for wrestling. So, you know, they were kind of up for it, but we could have done better. This was, I don't know what the thought process was here. It was whatever.
Like, I feel like this is not the first Poppy appearance, right? Didn't we have Poppy on like a previous takeover, I think?
I remember her music, but I don't remember seeing her perform. Yeah. I don't remember seeing anybody perform, really, but
Poppy performed in Portland. This is like a Brad Woodling podcast.
Yeah, okay. But
popping them peas with Poppy.
Luckily, things Poppy. Get better with the first match, which was Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic. Okay, I think I got that one. Wow. This crowd was amazing to watch, and they, right out of the gate, were in love with Keith Lee, which everybody is. This match was shockingly amazing to me. I'm like whatever about both of them, really. So I wasn't expecting this. I thought it would be sort of okay, but not my favorite thing. But good God, the agility of Keith Lee is just something that is shocking every time you see it. You know, he's just like, how does he move like that? But he, Dominik stayed with him, you know, it was like hit for hit, hard hitting, of course, that chair spot over on the floor.
yes.
Yeah, that was amazing. And I freaking love this match, just like pretty much everybody else, hopefully. I gave it 4 stars. What do you think, Tim?
Okay, coming to me first, because you know I'm probably going to back you up.
Yep.
So, spoiler alert, yes, the
Jack Offovich to this match, that's fine.
Jack Offovich, very good. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a Keith Lee mark. I'm going to make no bones about that. Jenny, I didn't know that you weren't necessarily, but...
yeah, I mean, it's great, but, you know, not nuts about it.
Well, you're marked for 700 wrestlers, Tim. You got to leave one or two off the list.
Yeah,
so.
You're right.
This is true. Well, in any case, I will say that I thought that the match started off a little bit slow, kind of took a minute to get out of first gear, and I was not totally feeling it. I thought a couple of those spots outside of the ring felt sort of contrived, right? They're just a little bit, I don't know, a little bit rehearsed, like they're going through the motions a little bit, but it totally picked up when they started getting into like high spot mode, which I mean, we kind of knew it was coming. Like, this is what you expect. This is not the first rodeo for either of these two guys. They've had several TV matches, and now they've got the takeover spot here to really get a showcase. And, you know, you had Keith Lee surviving that avalanche Spanish fly, which you knew was going to happen, but it's still so spectacular, and it's just a delight to see. Leading into the finish, which, you know, wasn't the biggest move, but puts Keith Lee over really strong, and he did get a lot of shine throughout this match. As you said, Jenny, speaking to the agility and just some of his power offense, you just love a good hoss fight, which is what this was. Great hoss battle. I didn't go the full four stars. I gave it just shy of that. 3.75 from me, but I don't begrudge you for that at all. So, love the work between these two. Mm-hmm. Keith Lee, I hope, is going on to bigger and better things. He is a future world champion in NXT. Just got that written all over him. Such great potential there.
You going to fight with Tim, Justin?
No, not here.
Okay.
Maybe later. I am shocked that Dijakovic is not up on Raw for Vince McMahon to fawn over. I mean, he's got the look, at the height, like everything about him looks like a Vince guy. So I'm sure he'll be there soon. But no, I like this a lot. It was wild. It felt a lot like, and I'm not pandering to my MCU Fuckfest podcast co-host here, but it felt like a superhero fight, right? Yeah. So these two big dudes throwing these ridiculous moves at each other, these huge bombs, like that to me is awesome. Like, that's my kind of match. I like the Haas matches, and when they're just throwing these big shots at the big shots, like, everything felt like it should murder a normal man, but because they're these massive superheroes, they don't. The senton into the desk chair that you mentioned earlier, Jenny, was an unreal spot. I mean, stick it without tipping the chair over with their combined weight and height in there. And their chemistry is really good. I mean, the biggest criticism, like, I saw out there was just that, well, we've seen them do this a bunch of times, but it's been great. Every time, it's even though it may be the same for them, it's also very different to see, like, these two big guys doing this stuff. Now, I do think this should probably be it for them because they have been feuding for a while.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it'll be interesting what they do with Lee. Like, is he going up, too? Like, they love him, obviously. They've given him a lot of shine on some big shows. So he's probably heading somewhere, but does that mean he loses, or is he another guy like an Asuka who leaves as champion? It'd be interesting how they treat him. I don't think that Dijakovic is ready to go up just because they haven't, you know, wrung him clean yet in NXT. Like, there's still a lot more to do with him, even though I do feel like he's a Vince guy. But and the finish was great. I love the finish too. And the crowd was super into it. So I went 4, just like Jenny. Keith Lee's awesome. And he has so much potential to just be a massive star for them. He's got the charisma, the look. He's different. He'll stand out. And, you know, just due to his size and what he can do as an athlete, I think he's someone that they'd be stupid not to really put over and trumpets as a star in front of the media, etc. So hopefully they treat him right. But this is a great opener.
Well, they are stupid, so we know they won't. But,
yeah. I know. But I don't feel like too many guys have been... I mean, a lot of guys have been protected and pushed strongly in NXT, but he's got to be near the top, right? I mean, Asuka's the only other one I can think of that was this protected in NXT. Like, can you think of another one that...
Not really. I wish we could get away from the call-up philosophy, but yes. I know that we won't, because it's a total, it's a Vince thing. Like, he sees these guys, like, he sees match.
No, I hate the call-up idea in general. Like, I don't think at this point it's even a call-up. Like, they're almost better off. Like, I don't mind if they stay, But that's not the world we're unfortunately stuck in.
And exactly. Honestly, I think it's going to get worse. You know, I think they're going to get called up more now that NXT is on, you know, on TV now. I think you'll see them go up a lot quicker, or like,
yeah,
it won't feel like they finished their NXT run and they're just going to kind of be gone if Vince,
but I think,
likes them.
Yeah. I think for the first time we might see, like the other way too. Like I don't think Charlotte's going to win at Mania, but they could. And then like there's a ton of new women she hasn't seen yet that she could have like a year run in NXT. Same for Balor, you know, and others. Like, I think if now that they're on, you know, main TV, and I think the perceived is just as big, if not bigger, than a lot of the main roster stuff. Like, why can't we get more of the outflow from the big, you know, the main roster too? And then if you start getting that back and forth, it doesn't feel like, all right, if Keith Lee goes up to Raw, like, that's it. Yeah. You know, we're done.
Right.
Why can't he come back in 2 years? Like, why, if they want to present it more that way, it could be good. Like, and it could give wrestlers a chance. We saw Tyler Breeze, like, he came back and had a little run. So why not let them freshen up down there against some new matchups?
Well, like Balor, I hope that Balor has really set the precedent for guys being able to move back to NXT without really losing a step. And if some of their heat has kind of been shaved off going to Raw or SmackDown, which, I mean, honestly, whose hasn't? But at the end of the day, if it means they can go back to NXT, it doesn't feel like a demotion. They can put on really great matches and get a lot of buzz behind their character again, then so be it. Then I mean, guys move between Raw and SmackDown all the time anyway, so why not put NXT in the mix? Shit.
Jake, how did you feel about this one?
Yeah, I echo a lot of what y'all have already said. I really liked the way they were able to kind of mix the hoss fight, like throwing bombs with all the like high-flying moves and stuff. I thought that worked really well. I went 4 stars on it, similar to I think most of us were on that ballpark. I also think, and this is something another match on this show had me thinking, but I think it's good for them to have like NXT, I think, is always seen as being like a bunch of little guys. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's nice to have, you know, a match like this with like two big guys coming out. Mm. It kind of goes against the perception that NXT is just all like, you know, Adam Cole, little guy, Johnny Gargano, like all these little guys that there's, you know, you can have a big hoss fight too, which I thought was nice.
That's a great point.
That is a great point.
I'm going to revise my grade up to 4, by the way. You just peer pressured me into it. I don't want to put a 1.
That was my
one out of the 4 to, you know, there's no reason not to give a 4. Fuck.
There you go.
I like it. All right, so moving on to a fucking banger of a match, Dakota Kai versus Tegan Nox. They had a really well-built feud going on since War Games, and so they're having a street fight. They pull out various amounts of weapons, including a cricket bat, trash can lids, tables, and they fucking go at it. It's like ECW style, like, I was shocked. Like, I like their story, but I don't really care much about the wrestlers themselves. I wasn't expecting much out of this one either. Jesus Christ. They went friggin' nuts on each other. It was like two mean girls. I mean, it wasn't like hair pulley fighting. It was like, I'm finna beat your ass fighting. Like, raw. And it was amazing. Like, I was shocked. So many like gross, sick things happen in this match, and then it's going so well, and then some crazy bitch, I don't even know who this is, comes out at the end. Gonzalez, I don't know who this is. Y'all gonna have to like smart me up, I guess. But and then ruins the spot that they've been building towards, and throws Knox on the table. I hated the finish, but damn. I like this match quite a bit. I gave it 4.5 stars.
Wow.
I know, right? I couldn't help it.
Wow. That was a love affair right there.
Yeah, it was great.
I loved the hot start, which this is like immediately earned stars for me just for not coming out for a street fight, a blood feud, and locking up or looking around at the crowd. I mean, you know, she attacked her in the aisle. We got going. No bullshit. The trash can lid shot by Dakota was disgusting.
Yes.
And then Tegan matched it with the German on the trash can, which was also nasty. And there's a lot of hate flowing throughout the match. Like, they wrestled it like they hated each other and wanted to kill each other. And that's what I loved about it. I also that Tegan wasted no time on the Pillmanizer. So she put the chair on her leg and just fucking stomped it.
Yeah.
Because she's so fueled by anger. She didn't do the look to the crowd. She didn't, like, contemplate if she should do it. She just did it. And then as soon as I typed that, I thought she was going to look around, because then she was going to when she kicked her in the head or whatever, and then she looked like she – but it actually was just her thinking of how the next way to murder her. Not like she had regret for a moment, which was like, no. And then she was like, nope, I'm just going to end you. I didn't mind the Gonzalez interference on one hand, because it keeps Nox strong. She couldn't really win yet, and I think they have other stuff planned for Dakota. But they kind of had to get them apart maybe for a bit too. Like, neither one should be losing, and I don't know, maybe we'll get them again at Mania weekend. I don't know. Or we could transition off. But the reason I didn't like it was because this is a death feud, and we end up kind of having a finish where, you know, we don't get the blow off. But maybe it's not meant to be the blow off. So either way, it felt like it was unearned for her to be in there, only because we haven't really seen her yet before. And they tried to explain who she was. Like, Beth did a good, you know, pretty good job saying she was on the Mae Young Classic and all this other stuff. But it would have felt a little more earned if we knew more about the backstory, especially since Dakota seemed confused. Like, it wasn't like some master plan by her to have, like, this new bodyguard come in and help her. She was like, who the fuck is this, kind of?
Yeah.
So that didn't
like
really...
Like me! Who the fuck
that didn't really help her, I wouldn't say. So anyway, that all boils down. I give it 3.75. I liked it a lot. The finish was a little wonky, but they brought the hate, they brought the heat, which was cool.
Tim.
JT, I want to take what you just said, behind the bleachers, get it pregnant. you know, we talked about the hate fest. We're going to disagree and fight going in, but this is one we will not fight on at all. I fucking hate that cliched baby face. Hesitate, I'm going to question my action, should I really do it, and then they slip on a banana peel and fuck up and lose, right? That's the total, every time you go into a street fest, that's how the baby face gets programmed. They go too far, and then they lose, because all baby faces in WWE have to look like fucking losers. And that's totally not what they did here. Mm-hmm. Completely skirted expectations, and... My God, I mean, who is Tegan Nox, right? She was so stone cold, even going into War Games, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then they do that great angle with Dakota turning on her, and it puts so much heat behind both of them, and you're pumped for this feud now. All of a sudden, now they're locked in this blood feud, and I thought it was a huge wasted opportunity not to let them go at it more, or really at all, when they're both in the Women's Royal Rumble earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Don't really know what the thinking was there, but anyway, that was a misstep. And here, it's like if anything was going to get shortchanged on this show in terms of matches that looked really promising on paper, I thought that this was going to be it. But they did not shortchange us at all. I mean, they really went at it. If anything, over-delivered. I was not really crazy about the finish, but at the same time, you're not supposed to be crazy about this finish. It's still a finish that makes sense for the storyline. I thought that Dakota did need to go over here as the heel, keep this thing going. But as you said, JT, just let them take a breath and come back to this feud. I think it's got a lot of legs, and sometimes you're not supposed to be in love with how a match ends, and that's exactly what this was. So I'm right there with you. I'm going to give it 3.75. And that sounds like, you know, I'm a little bit, I mean, 3.75 is still big, right? Yeah. But
it's crazy that it's low for like, this.
That's low. So. That's low for this show and for what we saw here tonight. But I mean, it's not really a reflection on, oh, the match should have been more. It was exactly what it should have been, I thought. And I was very happy with where this left us and where we're going to go from here.
It's impressive, too, how they've continuously restocked the women's division in NXT. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is just like two stars leave, two more come out. You know, they were just really good at making them all feel strong and championship level and presentable. Like any of the women on the show tonight could have easily been their torchbearer.
And this is not even a title match. I mean, it's just a feud within the women's division.
The two we see later, the two here, like it's just a continuous flow of strong talent. I mean, the only time they had made that little dip when it was like Asuka. I mean, it was like kind of Naya and Peyton Royce. You know, like, nothing against them, but they're just not at that level. So I think it's the only time where there was like a little dip, but they did a great job to hurry up and replenish it behind them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, just a thought that popped in my head as you were going through that. Jake, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, I was going to say that too. Like, because of this feud, now both of these women, it's like they were kind of forgotten and now they matter again and people care, which is amazing that they were able to do that just, you know, in that one moment at War Games, just completely, you know, add two, you know, viable women that matter again. But I really enjoyed it. Like Jen said, I was almost shocked at like the level of violence at times, like the chair shots, like when she did kind of like the Van Terminator, it kind of connected on the head. Uh-huh. And like there was one spot where like Dakota Kai like got tripped on the apron or something, just completely like ate shit, like her face just smacked the apron. Like there were a lot of brutal spots. I felt like they both came out like they wanted to really prove themselves. And I think at times it felt a little like they looked a little bit nervous at certain points, but I think it was just they had so much energy that I think it kind of translated that way. But I really thought they both came out wanting to prove themselves, and I think they accomplished what they set out to do because it was really awesome. The finish, like I've already said, I thought was a little awkward just because it's not somebody that I think, you know, 80% of people watching are going to be familiar with. And it's kind of like with a match as violent, like, where do you go from here? Which I'm sure they'll figure it out, but it's kind of like when this is this brutal, like, what's the next step, I guess? So after this, here it goes. But I went 3 3/4, too. I thought it was awesome.
I hope that Tegan Nox is okay, honestly. I mean, that chokeslam hitting the table but not breaking it, it looked a little rough. And I'm not blaming anybody for that. It's just, it seems like one of those shit happens kind of spots. Yeah. But
I kind of like that the table didn't break in that one.
I felt like it fit
the match. It was like more brutal. I mean, I hope she's fine, obviously, but if it's going to happen, at least I thought it looked good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looked very good. I mean, it looks sick. So
yeah. I'm guessing Last Woman Standing or something is probably their end game after that one, but it'll be interesting where they go for sure.
That'd be very cool. And Dakota played her role really great here. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. She's been presenting herself as like this badass heel of the women's division. And here she pretty much for the majority of the match got her shit pushed in. I mean, she did get some shine, but all indications were she was going to lose this match if not for the interference by what's her name, Raquel Gonzalez, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
I only remember now because of the Raquel Welch joke. That's the only thing.
Yeah, you made a Raquel Welch joke, which I appreciated. But yeah, we'll see where that goes. But I just love the character that they have. I mean, Dakota's kind of a whiner, right? But she can get the job done, but she sort of takes shortcuts and bitches and moans along the way, and yet she still got the win here. And I kind of enjoy that kind of character. Yeah. So,
no, and I'm with you. She was clearly going to lose. So, you know, Tegan gets basically the visual win, which is
right.
The visual win. All right. Another visual win.
Visual people.
Finn Balor versus Johnny Gargano. We all win visually in this match, even though it's like an ab battle. And
yeah.
Finn,
bad battle? Is that what you said?
Ab battle.
Oh, I just said
ab. Ab mania.
Ab. So, yeah. Okay. This match. I'm wondering if this is where some of the fighting's going to come in, but it started out a little bit slow, but they built it pretty well towards the end, and Balor was very cocky and just sort of picking Gargano apart as much as he could. He was pretty dominant most of the match. But Johnny, you know, he makes it look even that much better. He makes Finn look amazing, selling for him and bumping around like crazy. I'm kind of watching it now and got distracted by that, but Finn won. I picked Johnny to win. So kind of not liking that, but I did like this match. I gave it 4 stars. What about you, Jake?
I also went 4 on it because to me, this is kind of like a mean, Johnny Gargano match kind of like, I can't say it like knocked my socks off or anything, or it was like completely amazing, but I almost feel like 4 is him, like him going through his normal stuff to me can kind of get you to 4. My main thing with this is that I guess I didn't really know what was like, I don't know where they're going. I don't know like really what the goal is. Like, I guess it felt a little exhibition-y to me at times. Like, I wasn't really, like, it was solid. Like, you get your usual, like, you know, with Johnny, the cool reversals and all that kind of stuff. And it was slow, but again, that's kind of like how he normally starts. He usually starts with the mat work, but I'm usually not that into Finn, which I thought he was pretty good in this match. I think he worked well, but I don't know. It's like 4, but I guess not an enthusiastic 4, or like it was just kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a Johnny match, which I feel like that's kind of his average. I don't know.
Is Johnny cursed with greatness now? It's like, you know, what's a guy got to do, you know?
He kind of reminds me of,
he broke,
like,
that curse tonight. He broke it.
Yeah, maybe I should. I don't know. I have a hard time, like, breaking this match down. I don't know why.
It is weird to talk about. Justin, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with Jake on the exhibition part. I do like what is supposed to be heel Balor, even though the crowd was pro Balor and anti Johnny in this match. You know, they started kind of slow, then they ramp up, and I did feel bad for him for a minute because they had to follow that bomb war and that weapons brawl, and God bless Tegan and Dakota, because that should have been the death slot after the other one.
Yeah.
And then they doubled down, and it was so good that these guys now had to follow those with a straight match, which isn't easy. And again, I was surprised the crowd was out on Johnny, especially during the hot back and forth. That dropkick to the barricade was pretty sick. What I wanted here is not what I got. And what I wanted, what does this say about NXT? But no, what I wanted was just a non-epic Gargano match, like, for once. Like, it would have been a nice change. And we know Balor is really good at, like, the sprint semi-squash kind of thing. And you have a built-in story, because you tell it later, that Gargano is maybe confused, conflicted. He's torn because his buddy's fighting for what he perceives to be his title, and his buddy was a prick to him, and now they're maybe friends. Like, okay, you know, you can sell that maybe he's just having a tough night, right? So, and Balor's been established; he's a former world champion on, you know, the main brand. So why can't this just be like a 6-minute hot match that Balor catches a flash pin and that's it? You know what I mean? Like, to me, and how long, Jake? I think you had the times pulled up. How long was this? Banana Fest.
Almost like 30 minutes, 27:22.
Oh, God. Yeah, like, give me a third of that, and I would have been happy. And then
I kind of know what you mean.
It is really, we don't, like, Gargano always has these long matches, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a short one or two mixed in, but I don't think so. Like, I think most of his shit, because he's been in the main event pretty much for the last 2.5 years, cosplaying a Shawn Michaels, that, you know, we have, like, every match is this long, drawn-out epic with multiple kickouts. Like, not every match has to be that. And this was the perfect opportunity on a 6-match card following 2 red-hot brawls to just go out there, and even if you go 10 minutes, fine. And Balor beats him like they did, and we tell the story later that Johnny's head was just not there. Or that Balor's is better than him, which isn't a bad story either. So I thought this was very solid. I went 3.5. I just didn't think it needed to be as long and gratuitous as it was. We just didn't need it on this night. Like, save it if you want, but, and then it didn't work out anyway to me. Like, it's still, like, it just, it was exhibition-y, like Jake mentioned. Just, I don't know, something about it didn't click, and it has started to be a tough night for Gargano.
Like maybe for the spot it was in and what the feud was, I kind of get what you're saying. Like maybe it wasn't, it didn't need 30 minutes for what the match was.
Not every match on NXT has to, a takeover has to be like a dream match. You know what I mean? Like not every match has to be this epic war with the million. And what it does is, it to me, it's lessening when it does happen. Because we kind of got it here, then we get it in the tag, and then we get it in the main event. It's like, all right, like what is a finisher at this point? What is what? Like what does what mean? Anything mean? At some point, it just all gets to be a little too gratuitous. So the easiest spots for me to taper it down, like I'm fine if it happens in the main event, if we're just going to get more of a basic match here. And these are two guys that can put on a great basic match because they're both awesome. Like this isn't a criticism of them. It's just the way this match was set up. Didn't need to go the way it went on this night.
Tim.
Okay. I guess this is where we part company. So I don't fundamentally disagree with the assertion that this was a textbook Johnny Gargano match. Yes, it absolutely was. But I think what it comes down to, honestly, and this is going to sound like a cop-out, but it's just sort of a matter of personal preference. And my threshold for gratuitous is probably a little different from most people. Like, I will give you that that Johnny Gargano versus Adam Cole, 2 or 3 falls, their third match that they had. That's where I was like, okay, I can see where this is getting a little gratuitous. Mm-hmm. But here, yeah, it was the textbook Johnny epic formula. And most of the time, I am down for that shit.
And maybe it wasn't full gratuitous. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't... wasn't grand gratuitous
well,
like that.
I mean,
like
to
that
be honest,
was, like the
watching
match.
The match, watching the match, I could kind of, and this is not me trying to be pompous or anything, but I could kind of anticipate this kind of criticism coming because I could see some of those spots. I could see how people could come away with that sort of attitude towards it because it was very, all right, here's a spot, we're going to reverse it, but we're still going to get all our shit in. And we're going to go, as you said, 27 minutes, which is a pretty long match. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, that kind of shit works for me. What doesn't work when it comes to these types of matches is when you get into that kind of, I'm sorry, I love you type of, and stay down, where the easiest way to make a guy stay down is hit him with a finisher and pin him. And that's not what this match was. It was just, it was a lot of mat-based stuff in the early goings, which, again, you totally expect in a Johnny Gargano match, and then it picks up and it goes into sort of high spots, a lot of stuff on the outside, a lot of big move, kick out, false finishes. And, I mean, I'm just, that's my kind of wrestling at the end of the day. And, again, total personal preference. I know that doesn't work for everybody, but I'm sort of at a point in how I consume my professional wrestling that I don't watch this stuff enough that it goes into that diminishing returns type of effect for me. I'm just always going to be down for this, I feel like. And you can say that it does take away from other matches when they just go for that over and over and over, but in my mind, it just feels like raising the bar more and more where, yeah, a finisher doesn't finish. So what's the point of a finisher? Well, it just means that I don't know how a match is going to end. And maybe that's not the best in terms of psychology. I get that. I totally get that argument.
Well, it's not even a finisher to me. It's the severity of the move. And that, I don't think we got that here as much, which is why I agree it wasn't super gratuitous because we didn't get like a ton of huge bombs and finishers. And again, take finishers, what I'm saying is like, you know, a deadly move on the floor or, you know, something like that. Like, I'm not saying, oh, this is the move that finishes other matches as much as like this should be a finishing move because
this should be a finish. Sure.
How violent it is. I don't think we got a lot of that here. I just would have been nice to get a different Johnny match. That's all for a change because he's capable of doing it. Like what we've seen him do so far is show some, you know, variance in style, but the framework in that style has always been the same. Whether it's, you know, a weapons blood feud with Ciampa or a straight match with Ricochet. Like, and actually the Ricochet match I think stood out for me as great because it was so different. Like it was quicker, right? That, I think that was no more than 15 minutes, I don't think. And so like that was a different, like I wanted that Gargano.
It was Johnny working as a heel too, and this is pretty typical babyface Johnny Gargano.
But he was a heel here because the fans were fucking booing him.
You know what? That's another thing that maybe we should talk about. We're in this place where you don't really know what to do with a Johnny Gargano.
That match was 23 minutes with Ricochet, so that was more. I guess it's a little short for him, but it still was much longer than I thought.
It wasn't his typical formula. Certainly would give you that. We're in this place where Finn has had this great reinvention as a heel. Like Jake, I was never really down on the Finn Balor character as a babyface. He's just, as much as I might admire looking at him, I don't necessarily like watching his matches. So it's kind of like people are going to get behind any strong character, which is the same problem you have on the main roster because you have so many just flat, stone-cold babyface, any kind of character. So anyone who kind of breaks out personality-wise is going to get cheered, and certainly you're going to see that with Finn. But Johnny's in that place where he's maybe done all you can do with this particular roster of talent. Like, I think that this Finn feud has bought him some time, but short of Finn coming down here, it kind of felt like he was done after that Adam Cole feud, right? And that was last year. And this is coming from me, who never wants to see anyone leave. And I'm still like, he's really kind of done it all. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know. What do you do? Go to AEW? Fuck. I don't know what the answer is for him.
I think it kind of goes with it, too. It, like, combines, so you have a guy who's kind of, like, seems like he's a little bit aimless, kind of floating. And then you kind of feel like the match is a little formulaic. It kind of all combines to kind of, you know, I guess drag him down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't even mind having, like, a gatekeeper of NXT. Like, I thought Joe was going to be that guy, and he kind of was for a while. Like, it's okay to have NXT lifers. Like, and that might be the best role for Gargano, honestly. Like, unless something severely changes on Raw, SmackDown, like, he's best off there. And there's always going to be an influx of new guys for him to fight. They just need to warp and change. And maybe this heel turn will do it, that we'll talk about in a minute. This needs to change the formula up a little bit. That's my only issue. I don't mind him being there and being spotlight and being on every takeover, because most of his matches, you know, we're picking us apart, but a 3.5 is still, you know, very good for me. Like, I mean, that's a very good match. I wouldn't give a ton of those. But for his standard, to me, this was just a little, all right, let's see something else.
I will say that I think this is a really hot feud. It's been going since, September, October, I guess, going into War Games, which was where we thought we were going to see the match, and we didn't due to injury, so they kept it going, which, great, fine. Johnny got a little time off, maybe not in the way that you would want, but in a way that really benefited this feud and this match. And I do think that there is an opportunity to move him into a different role, into that gatekeeper role, where he is having different types of matches that are not necessarily so predictable, where you have the kind of just basic 6-7 minute match and you're like, oh, that totally subverted my expectations. Great. I don't think that this was necessarily the match to do that in, because it did have so much history behind it. And I'm just, in my head, I have this, like a lot of us, I have this vision of what I want a match to be based on the story, based on the build, based on the feud. And this really kind of exceeded my highest hopes and dreams. And for that reason, maybe I'm, call me crazy, it's fine. I gave this 4.5 stars. I love this.
All right. There we go. I can get on board with that. All right. Next up we have, oh God. Rhea Ripley versus Bianca Belair. So, yeah. I was really looking forward to this one. for lots of reasons. But something that stood out for me, seeing Bianca, her performance at Royal Rumble really made me look forward to this match in particular, because Rhea is looking towards WrestleMania and not really that bothered with Bianca. So Bianca had a good shot to kind of get in her head a little bit. And I think that a lot of said about Bianca's like athleticism and her power and all that stuff, but not enough is said about her cleverness, because she really shows that off in this match too. she takes all the little opportunities that she can to get in on Ripley, even though Ripley is, you know, pretty dominant in the match. I just thought Bianca looked wonderful. I really, really loved this one. Rhea won, of course, not a surprise. And then at the end, Charlotte, my love, shows up to accept her challenge to WrestleMania. So I gave it 4 stars. And I'm going to stop rambling now. Jake, you ramble for a minute.
Yeah, kind of similar. I thought it was really good. I thought this was another hoss fight. I know you don't usually refer to women matches like that, but I thought it was kind of a hoss fight. I really love, and Rhea's just like super over.
Yep.
Like incredibly over. She just feels like a star. I love that spot she does where the opponent's sitting and she like does a drop kick while they're sitting, which is an awesome spot. Yeah, I thought it was really good. Just kind of solid. I went 4 on it. I thought Bianca did look good, like Jenny said. I'm interested to see where they go with this, too. So I was going to ask y'all, do you think, so with the Charlotte thing, so do you think, is Charlotte, Rhea, I guess that's on Mania, right? Or
I wonder.
Or would they put that on TakeOver? I don't know.
I think it's definitely Mania.
Yeah, I think it's Mania, too. But I guess it's just weird because then you have, so if Rhea is the champion, do you not have the NXT Women's Correct. Champion on TakeOver? It kind of creates a weird dynamic.
I think it gives them a shot to do possibly Tegan and
Dakota
again,
and or Raquel.
Or Raquel Welsh, and put a number one contender stip or a big stip on it, and just let that headline. Like this is where the women's depth comes into play. Like, I think we're fine because I think that match could be like just as great. And this card's already going to be stacked. So we got so many people to fit in. Mm-hmm. It may not be the worst thing to just have Rhea be on a Mania. And I guess I just saw something come across that in his conference call that he always does, like after TakeOver, Triple H didn't really shy away from the fact that Bianca Belair could be added to that match, which is something that I saw being asked of a lot. And I didn't think this was totally fair for her, honestly, to be in this spot because, I'm torn on it, right? Because she deserves
this Bianca?
Yeah.
Like, she deserves this spotlight. Deserves this match. But she doesn't deserve another loss, right? So it's like, at some point, you know, you keep sticking her out there in the spot. And this has to be, what, her third or fourth? It feels like women's title takeover loss. I mean, I feel like she lost the one to Shayna twice, right? Didn't they fight at least twice? I thought. And then this one, come on.
I'm actually looking for it NXT now. I'm wondering the same thing.
I think it was the once.
Well, no. Oh, weren't they in a four-way as well?
They did have a four-way.
The Brooklyn one I went to, I thought they were in one together. Or maybe it was last year.
The four-way was TakeOver New York.
Right. Okay.
So Mania weekend last year
right.
was four-way.
But then she also had a solo one with her.
She did before that, yes.
So anyway, she's had a few, right? In here now. And they obviously like her a lot. The Rumble Shine, Jenny, you mentioned, was big.
Yeah, Phoenix, January and TakeOver Phoenix last year, she had a singles match against Shayna and Law. It's hard to believe Bianca's been around.
Well, that's my point. Right now, she's been around in the title picture for a year, over a year. Mm-hmm. So at some point, it's like, all right, you know, what are you doing, right? Are you going to put the belt on her? Is she going to move up? Like, what is she doing? She shouldn't just keep losing title matches. Because after a while, this doesn't make sense why she keeps getting title matches. Mm-hmm. She's going to keep losing matches. So at some point, you got to do something. Or just maybe not put her in these spots. I also get, though, why they didn't do a shit finish, which would have probably telegraphed what they made Yuka Mania. Now, I do think she deserves something. So maybe this is your big takeover match, Jake. Maybe it's a match to earn a slot at Mania. And maybe it's Belair versus Charlotte on takeover.
No, I'm not having that. I love Bianca, but no, I'm not.
And if Bianca beats Charlotte, no. She gets into the match.
It's shitty. Just...
But it kind of raises the whole thing that it's kind of like, because I think in NXT, like a year or two ago, you would say the next top women's feud in NXT would be Rhea, Bianca, and that would be like their next big feud. But now that they're kind of intermingling with the main roster, now you throw Charlotte in there and it kind of makes things a little tricky.
I think she's going to end up in that match. But even if it's not Charlotte that she beats on TakeOver, you could have her versus someone to earn that match. Who? I don't know. I'm not sure. But maybe she has to win something and then she gets inserted in. But I think some way she definitely gets in there. And she's earned it. She deserves that spotlight. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing to me will be if Charlotte or Rhea works. You know, do they have Rhea win and get the big win over her, or does Charlotte win as she usually does? And like we mentioned earlier, just got to work NXT for, you know, 8 months or something as champion. The match itself, I thought, was a fun power war. The back half was awesome, starting with the press slam that Bianca did, which was amazing. And then whipping her across the ribs with the hair was nasty. And I loved the finish, because I just mentioned earlier, we got that non-finisher spam match, right? I mean, we just got the finish and ended. And I think Rhea's ready for Mania. I like the Charlotte stuff after. I went 4 stars. This was a lot of fun. I love the power dynamic for both of them. Jake mentioned it was a Haas match. It was. And again, I love that we didn't get a million trading of big spots. The big spot ended it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Tim?
Yeah, I will say I thought Bianca looked really impressive here. Mm-hmm. And I sort of surprised myself having to go back through all of these takeovers to see when was her first title shot against Shayna, and God, more than a year ago, back in January, that takeover Phoenix in 2019. And I do agree with JT's point that why does she keep getting placed in these types of matches if she's not going to ultimately win the big one? At a certain point, it makes somebody feel like a choke artist when they are placed in that role. But credit to her that she definitely doesn't, in my mind, I don't perceive her as that at all. I'm just surprised that they've been able to keep her as strong as she has been for so long now. But yeah, we're kind of getting to that point where it's shit or get off the pot with her. And that's to say nothing about what she has brought to the ring, because if anything, she has improved greatly since that time. I think she looks a million times better than she did in that initial title match that she had. And again, that's to take nothing away from her match with Shayna, which I thought at the time was pretty excellent. But yeah, I'm very much on the Bianca bandwagon. At the same time, pretty torn over the prospect of a WrestleMania three-way, because that is such the cheap, laziest, shitty type of booking. They always do this fucking bullshit where it's like, oh, we've got the obvious title match, but oh no, odd man, or in this case, an odd woman out. Oh, we got to make it a three-way. They always go to that well.
See, I don't know if it's lazy in this case, though, because I think Bianca like legitimately deserves in there. Like, I don't think they were lazy with
me off.
But I don't think they were lazy with the story, though.
No, they
like I don't know how else they could have.
This time they're not. You're right, and that's what pisses me off, and that's why I'm of two minds about it, because this is the one time it kind of would make sense, but they've done it so many fucking times over and over where it really didn't make sense. And it feels very played out to do that triple threat title match at this point, right? Just on paper, it's like they always do this. It's always the obvious go-to thing. And even though it would result in a good match, like in a vacuum, it would make sense. It would work here. Can I live with it? Yes. But just I have that immediate knee-jerk just rejection of the attitude there. So I don't know. I don't know where we go from here. God, I want more for Bianca, but I love Rhea Ripley as champion.
Right.
Charlotte has kind of had her day. Don't get me wrong. I love Charlotte. I'm kind of with you, Jenny. As much as I kind of shouldn't, I never really have strong feelings against a Charlotte win. Like, even though it's sort of back in the day it was LOL Cena wins, right? And now it's sort of turned into that for Charlotte. And I should feel some kind of way for it, and I just don't because I like her enough.
Like, I don't care.
But this is the one time where I think a Charlotte win would be the worst possible scenario for anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see either Rhea Ripley retain, or maybe Bianca does get her big day, does get a big Mania victory. That would be awesome for her. I'd love to see that. But I don't want to see that goddamn title triple threat that they always do.
All right.
And I went 4 stars on the match. I didn't say a lot about the match. All right. But I agree with most of what else has been said about this match.
All right. We'll see what's up next. We got the Undisputed Era, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish versus the Broserweights, Matt Riddle, Pete Dunne. Oh, my God. I was looking forward to this one the most. The Broserweights come out in their Brosermobile. Is that what they're calling it? Brosermobile?
The Brosermobile. I hope so.
With their trophy. It was great. And they did the same thing that Tegan and Dakota did earlier. Just a hot start. Not even fucking around. And
well, that was after the fish fry.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That was the only thing I didn't really. I liked the entrance a lot in the car. I just thought that went like saying it once and referencing the shirt.
Yeah, could have been, went on. We didn't like a beat again.
It did feel like bad wrestling comedy the way they kept pushing that button.
But Matt Riddle can do that, in my opinion. Like,
yeah, because that. I feel like it's supposed to be like he's kind of burnt, you know?
Yeah.
It went on a little too long.
He was burnt, for sure. But smooth as fuck in the ring, because this was like a beautiful, beautiful match to watch. Like, it was wonderfully choreographed. Everything was just smooth. Like, O'Reilly and Fish are just like, they're a very good tag team. I really enjoy watching them, but Pete and Matt had this weird chemistry that shouldn't work, but somehow does. Pete is surprising to me, the success in the tag team, because he always seemed very reluctant to do it. I've never really considered him, you know, like the personality for a tag team, because he's very surly, and I really love that about him. But this little bromance that he's found with Matt is just really over, and very entertaining to watch. I thought they were beautiful. I mean, it was so much fun to watch. I'm a sucker for those tandem, like, submissions in the middle of the ring at the same time. Yeah, I love that. And they did that a couple of times. Matt is just a delight to watch. And the bros win in a shock for me. I did not pick them to win. And I went 4.5 stars, Tim.
Yeah, wow, this, I would say, exceeded my expectations. You don't know what you're going to get with these thrown-together tag teams most of the time. And sometimes it's chicken salad, sometimes it's chicken shit. this was definitely chicken salad. This was actually magical, mystical chicken salad. I love this team. I love their chemistry. Undisputed Era, O'Reilly and Fish are so very fluid. You talked about the tandem submissions, which I love that kind of stuff too. I also love a great heel tag team that isolates a limb, works that limb over, tags out, the partner comes in, the continuity of that ring work continues, which is what we see with Undisputed Era here. I'm just such a sucker for that kind of thing. And there was not a dull moment in this match. I was glued to the screen watching this. Like, I was afraid to get up to pee, to comment in the chat, to get a drink, to write anything down. And I have nothing written down in my wrestling notebook, Jenny, for this match because I was afraid. I was just that tuned into it. It pulled me in so much, which most matches cannot do. I almost think, is it hyperbole to say that this is one of the best tag team matches in NXT history? Like, I know we're coming off of it. We're still very fresh, but I mean, that was kind of my impression. And I mean, I'm sort of trying to talk myself out of it again because of recency bias, but I mean, I would put it up there with some of the greats. And I think that there is a very bright future here in terms of rematch potential. Mm-hmm. Not sure I was totally convinced that that Matt and Peter Dunne were going to win it, but at the same time, I'm sort of wondering, okay, Roderick Strong has already lost North American title to Keith Lee. Now we have the tag team champions going down. So are we going to be telling the story of this sort of slow, gradual spiral of the Undisputed Era, which may culminate perfect timing at a Mania takeover?
Right.
We shall see. So now the tag team champions have been dethroned. I love this team of Matt and Peter Dune. Gotta love. Commentary was great for this match.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Mauro and Nigel, sometimes they're really feeling it. And boy, were they feeling it tonight.
Rarely do you hear somebody correct the other one, you know? Like, it's done.
Correct the other
one. Yeah. I was losing it.
So that was really firing on all cylinders. Just the match clicked on every level. I will back you up in saying 4.5 stars here.
Woo-hoo! All right, Justin.
So I don't think it's the best tag match in NXT history, but it is one of the best. I don't think it's better than those revival matches, but I'm with you. Yeah, and I think this is going to be one that ages very well. Like, I think it's the one we're going to look back at a couple years and be like, oh, this may be the best. I think it's just going to need some time to see how the style evolves, because what I loved about it was the style is very different and not very traditional. And I think if this becomes a new type of style, is it looked at as a torchbearer or like a, you know, does it get punished in a way, right? Because now we've seen a million of these. If it stands on its own in a match like that, I could see it like maybe starting to become the best ever for some people. The hard hitting
reminds me a little bit of that No Mercy 2002 tag with Benoit Angle versus Edge and Mysterio. I don't know why, but for some reason, like, that became the big benchmark standard bearer in tag matches, like, immediately when it happened, right? Where everything started getting compared to it. It's still a great match and one that people get back to, but at this point, not really in the conversation for all-time best ever, but this is maybe that new standard bearer where I think it has been done better, but this has sort of raised the bar in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe it comes a thing where the revival match is the best pure style, and this is the most, you know, whatever style this one you want to call this, Broser style. But I love the short heat segments. You know me, like, if you follow any of my reviews, I'm a fan of when there's double heat segments, which we had here. I like the two short versus the one long sometimes. But Riddle and Dunn, like, they're really good with their double up teamwork and their face offense when they're working together. So we got a lot of that in here blended in between those heat segments. Dunn kicking the post by accident, not by accident, but when he misses the kick was sick. I love the hot reversal sequence late with all four, and it leads into the double ankle lock. And then the spot where Fish was on Riddle's back in the sleeper and Riddle still is able to come over and break up O'Reilly with his hold of the knee of the head was cool. The crowd is so into Riddle here. I mean, it's like just going nuts for him. I liked Undisputed Era working the calf and the leg. That one spot where he knees him off the top to the calf was really good. And I thought, for my criticism earlier with the Gargano match, where I thought that went too long, and you could even argue a little bit maybe the Keith Lee match went a little bit long, I thought it was fully warranted here because all four guys, you got the constant pendulum swinging, and I thought they still left a lot like out there.
Yeah.
there's still more meat in the bone. Like, I don't think they even met all the potential they could have. And there was tons of them to dig into here. And they dug into most of it, but not all of it. I like the breakup teases, right? You've got the Strike Force memorial spot where Dunn bumped into Riddle on the apron, and you're like, oh, here we go. But that was a nice fake swerve. They stay tight bros. And then the final sequence and them winning was great. Like, the crowd goes nuts with the win. The celebration felt emotional and real. It was it connected very well with the crowd, and it was very unique. I thought it was excellent. I went 4.5. It was my match of the night.
Ooh. Jake, what say you?
Yes. So I've always loved O'Reilly and Fish. Mm-hmm. They were my favorite tag teams ever. And the Broserweights are kind of like a dream team for me, like a fantasy-like team to put together. Mm. Like Tim said, if they're chicken salad, they might be chicken salad with an extra ingredient thrown in, if you know what I mean.
Some oregano. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. But they're just like a classic odd couple team. But I really love this match. I really love the emphasis on teamwork. Like y'all mentioned before, I didn't really follow kind of a classic tag, like really long heat segments building up to a hot tag as much. But I really loved how much they emphasized like teamwork. And it wasn't just double team moves, which they had a ton of and they were really awesome. But just like, and I think O'Reilly and Fish always do this, which I always love, is that they always feel like they're working to never fall behind. Mm-hmm. Like, they never want to, like, be at the disadvantage, so they'll make quick tags. They'll always try and, like, get some desperation move to make sure that they don't lose momentum. And then I felt like the Broserweights kind of met them with that, and it was just, like, a constant back and forth of that, which was really awesome. So it wasn't just teamwork in the sense of, like, pulling out cool double-team moves, but that teamwork, where they were really, like, quick tags, making sure that, like, neither team felt like they wanted to get to the point where they were, like, in peril, which I thought was a cool, like Justin said, kind of like a different way of looking at it, like a different style. There were just a ton of great sequences. I loved, there was one moment where it's like O'Reilly and Riddle kind of went at it, and they had a pretty awesome sequence of, like, kicks and knees and stuff, which was killer. And I also think everybody in here is a great character, like plays their role well, like just little moments, like when Peter Dune goes to bite. I forgot who he was biting, but like you can just see like a little grin go across his face, which was also like just little moments like that were awesome. And then the Broserweights winning and the crowd, you know, exploding for him was an awesome, was a cool moment, because it was kind of, I wouldn't say like completely unexpected, because they are two pretty, you know, I guess in a way you could kind of see him as a super team, but it's kind of like, do they really pull the trigger on him? And they did, and it was awesome. Man, I had 4.75, so I think that would put me as high, but I'm almost like tempted to go to 4.5, because it's really hard for me to think of anything I did not like. So I think I'm just going to go 5. Why not?
Maybe if
we look back, cool. I'll be like,
do it.
Yeah, I'm going to go 5. This was awesome. I'd put it up there with the, I don't know, I'd have to compare them, and like was mentioned, recency bias, but I would put it at least up there with the Revival matches, I think. But okay. Yeah, it was awesome. I'll go 5.
I'd love to see a series with these guys. Mm-hmm. Much like the Mustache Mountain Undisputed Era. They had like 3 matches in a really short span of time that were all really cool, really good and really different. I would love to see that same kind of booking towards this feud. So we'll see.
You know, though, part of me wants it just to live on its own and that be it. Like, this one time they came together, like, and you know, if you want to compare it, I don't know if those 4 guys ever fought again at No Mercy 02, that exact match. I mean, they might have fought on SmackDown at some point, Tim, but
yeah, like maybe not that exact match. Yeah,
right. So maybe this lives in canon. It's like the one time these guys came together and had this masterpiece. And we don't go to the well a bunch of times. But to your point, if they could do it in different ways, then yeah, maybe it works too.
Yeah. Oh, I would definitely want to see different. Because I go back to what you said, where it felt like they still had something in the tank. Like they didn't reach their total full potential. Then give us that one match where they just unload everything, right? So, which I think works better in a tag team environment than in a singles, because you do have spots where it's logical that, like, a partner comes in and breaks up a pin or whatever, where you can have these false finishes that don't feel as contrived necessarily as they do in, well, let's face it, a textbook Johnny Gargano match.
And our main event, Adam Cole versus Tommaso Ciampa. Okay. Lots of emotion going into this one for me. Mm-hmm. So Daddy's home and he wants to take Goldie back home too, but he has to get through old biceps Adam Cole and
old biceps.
I know this match is going to be like probably all over the place for a lot of different people, but I'm with Tim on, like, my threshold for ridiculousness is pretty high, and they just kept amping it up. But before it got all crazy, I still really liked it. And it was very, like, they're evenly matched. They know each other really well. They know where to hit each other. They know how to counter each other. And it just got to the point where they kept getting more and more frustrated with each other. And then it was just amazing move after amazing move. Like, I mean, I started writing all the huge bumps down, but then I was just like, I can't keep track of them because they keep happening. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people don't like that, but I do like that. So I kept biting on them every time, all the near falls. Reminiscent of other matches, yes, but not in a bad way for me. The crowd was, like, orgasmic during this match, and I think that really helped. I don't know how y'all feel about that, but I friggin' love this crowd, and I love this match, and I gave it 5 stars. Justin.
Oh, all right. Wow. I'm going to light the bomb right out of the gate. Okay.
Yeah.
So, big match feel. I feel like it could go either way. And I was excited when it started up. So you get the slow start as usual. And it's two different guys, right? We've seen them both match up with Gargano in these big matches, but not against each other. So that was cool. Business picks up when you get the barricade spot. And then the Cole wheelbarrow suplex on the table was nasty.
Oh, my God.
And Tim, you probably know this one best. And Jake, you probably do too. Jenny, I don't know if you're as well-versed in my history on this one, but I'm going to dust off.
Okay.
Pull it out of the casket, the old SummerSlam 2002 Shawn Michaels Triple H augment in this one. Okay. So we get all
it was
these
too good.
Okay.
Get all these sick moves to Ciampa's neck. Yes. And he's insane for taking them all, right?
Yes.
And yes. He knows the sunrise, Panama Sunrise, may be lethal for this neck of his because this has been the story. His neck. He had the C4, whatever the fuck it was, fig, you know, everything, whatever. He went through all this turmoil and trauma, and he almost died, and he's got his wife and kid at home, blah, blah, blah. So he nails this awesome super kick. He blocks the sunrise. Now he wants to take out Cole's neck, so he hits the Emerald Frozen there. I forget what he calls it, on the apron. That was sick.
Air raid crash.
It'll always be the Emerald Frozen to me. And then, to me, this is where things go haywire. We get the Panama Sunrise on the fucking floor. And given Ciampa's neck history, that should be the death blow. And to me, it has nothing to do with that being a finisher or, you know, spamming. Like, that with a guy that has had a rehab neck not that long ago, where a story's being built around his neck, to do that move on the floor, roll inside, and then basically no-sell it. Like, I could see if he's out cold and Cole is too tired or too broken down, he can't get in the ring, and it's like 5 minutes. Give me something. But he stands up and then hits the DDT and Falcon. Like, this guy shouldn't even be walking right now after that move, let alone hitting two massive moves. Like, that was just a bit too much for me. So the pieces are there. We got these great spots. These guys are killing themselves, which I appreciate. But again, sometimes, Tim, yes, it's a little too much.
That was, like, not me.
Yeah, but you said it a second ago. Could have told a great story because they are two great workers. And Ciampa's selling is on point. Just around his neck. Like, Cole hits a heart, you know, a move out of the gate, and then the whole match is like, is his neck going to give out? Is it like, we didn't need the extra layer of a million massive moves to then not break his neck. Like, Just give me the teases of the sunrise and the tease and the tease and the tease. And then I love the Undisputed Era coming out, because this is what I always asked for in that JBL Cena match, right? WrestleMania 21. Like, mm-hmm. empty the fucking sink. Like, they are in desperation mode. They lost the Roddy Strong lost his belt before. Now the tag, Fish and O'Reilly lost theirs tonight. Like, they're desperate to keep this belt on Cole. So they're out there. They're throwing everything at him. Ciampa gets his visual pin, which, again, is fine. And then you get this nonsense with Gargano comes out. Is he heel? Is he face? Like, what's he doing? Like, it's been this way, honestly, for a while now, since the DIY reunion and the hug. Like, who's in what role? I'm very confused by Gargano. As someone that, admittedly, I don't watch every second of the weekly TV. I shouldn't be this confused about what his deal is with Ciampa. And if you really want to get into logistics, which I know, Jenny, you don't give a shit about, but if you want to screw this guy, why are you waiting 40 minutes into this match when all this hullabaloo is going on? And now, okay, now I'm confident it may end, so I'm going to come out. Like, it shouldn't have come out early. Give me something, and I've talked about this before. Like, I hate when there's a tag match and the guy has a premeditated turn at the end of the match. Like, if you're going to turn, just fucking turn. Like, come out 5 minutes in. So instead of that, give me a reason why he wasn't out there. He's detained. Well, he's being held in a room. Maybe he's there helping Ciampa, and he gets mad because Ciampa goes to, like, give me some reason other than waiting 40 minutes to come out and get his revenge. Like, it's little stuff like that prevents stuff, matches like this, from going to the next level. So this was great for a while, and then once he hit that sunrise on the floor, it all went to shit for me. I went 3.75, and I'm talking myself down, so I'm going to stop until I go lower. All the credit in the world for what they're out there doing, killing themselves and trying to make their hardest to make this work. And for Ciampa to sacrifice his neck like this is insane. And I just wish we had more focus. To me, the neck stuff got lost in that last, like, 10 to 15 minutes, especially when he popped up after the sunrise. All the time and all the investment that they've spent in this angle of his neck, it's like you're pissing on it. And I'm not someone that, like, who care. Like, I don't give a shit if a guy's selling the leg and he gets up on the, like, whatever. But this, to me, when the whole story is around his neck, for the neck to not come into the finish or to be ignored like that takes away from the match.
I took it to make him look like a superhero. You know what I mean? I like his will and determination and all that jazz, you know.
But it's your neck.
You
can have the will, but I mean, when you're like, if you have a bad neck and you get jammed on a floor, like, you can have all the will in the world, but to get up, stand right up and hit a move, I don't know. It just was hollow for me. It's like,
Or I think if you're going to do that, I wouldn't build it in the first half of the match.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? I wouldn't have Cole targeting his neck, mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, like trying to get that over and then sort of, like, I kind of have similar to Justin said. I don't think it hurt the match quite as much for me. I really did like what they did in the beginning, and I tried to go into it thinking, like, okay, I'm not going to overthink this. And I tried to look at it, like, really holistically. And just like, okay, just watch the match and, like, react to it. And at the beginning, I kind of noticed all this stuff. And they really had a ton of awesome stuff with the neck. Like, there was one spot where, like, Cole's been targeting his neck the whole time. And so he goes, like, he's going to kick him in the neck. So Ciampa goes up to block it with his arms. And so then he just kicks his legs out. And, like, stuff like that I thought was awesome. Because it's you know, telling the story that he's targeting the neck and Ciampa knows he's going after the neck, so he's blocking it. But kind of similar to what Justin said, when it got kind of towards the end, it's like I wasn't trying to overthink it. I just started to get, I think it kind of hurts the momentum of the match too, because you're just constantly going after his neck. And that's my thing. I think if you're just going to come out and be like, okay, it's just going to be all out, crazy move, then don't do that in the beginning, because you're kind of setting me up to be, you know, like, okay, the whole story of the match is going to, you know, it's going to be about Ciampa's neck, and is his neck going to hold up because he's hurt his neck, Cole's going after his neck, but then you got to eventually go somewhere with it, or it kind of, and I'm not saying like, oh, he can never move his neck the whole match or anything like that, but it's just they were doing such a good job with it and making that the story, and then I felt like they kind of just let it go.
It also doesn't,
like I said,
it also doesn't help that they, like I said earlier, they do this every, like, a million, like, this is the match template for all these matches. So it's like, again, this is a chance to be a little different and tell a different story around his neck. Like, we didn't need the million spam stuff and him, like, we already saw the sunrise big kick out from Gargano in New York. Like, give me something a little bit different to sink into. And I think this pops much bigger if it's just like bang in the neck, bang in the neck. You know, it just give me something along that versus, okay, the story we've seen Gargano do, Ciampa's just doing it now. Like, insert player X. Like, that's what it felt like.
And, like, I feel like I have a pretty high threshold. Like, I'm, like, a huge HBK fan who, of course, he's known for, like, all the melodramatics and stuff. And I'm usually all in on it. But I don't know. It's just, I don't even know what exactly is the point. But I just know when I reach it, when I'm watching the match, where it just starts, I don't know. It just starts taking away from me. I still went 4.25 because I still thought it was good.
Sean also didn't do it every match. You know what I mean? And his story built for so long. And same with Savage, who, you know, he's in this vein too, right? But they got there. And I'm not saying Gargano hasn't earned it because he's told that story in NXT. It's fine. But it's not every time. Like, not every pay-per-view match does Sean have these melodramatic 35-minute wars, right? Every now and then he had the 15-minute match with Randy Orton. Like, give me that sometimes, you know? And again, I'm okay with long matches. It's just it's becoming too much of a trend for me at all these shows. Like, I just want a little more variance.
Okay, so I think I'm on record as
I'm going to hang up stating, and listen. Go
ahead. There you go. I think I'm on record as stating it's a trend that I like. However, that is a very compelling and very convincing argument when you get into what was the point of telling the story of Ciampa's neck here if that wasn't going to play into the finish at all. Like, for all the histrionics and the theatrics and the gaga here, just why are you going to have that as such a major, major part of the body of the match if it's just not going to get paid off in any way?
His story. Even the video pack was about his neck.
And it was a great story. Right. And I think that's where I'm at here. And this is, again, something we're coming off of very fresh. And it's like a push-pull between the psychology of the match itself, the storytelling of what they're trying to get over in the ring work itself, and the character. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, man. Like, I just, again, we're getting into personal biases here. And I am so used to that WWE babyface who is always a fucking loser and is an idiot and always looks bad in defeat. That's why the heels are always over, because only the heels have any sort of character in WWE. And that's not just a main roster phenomenon. I think that kind of bleeds over into NXT, although they are not as bad about it. And here, and Tommaso Ciampa, we have an actual badass babyface who just eats all of this offense, keeps coming, looks like a monster, basically. Mm-hmm. So it sort of begs the question, why do you even try to tell the story of he has this huge vulnerability in his neck? Like, why even go there if that's not going to be what you emphasize or what you want to get away from,
right,
in terms of criticisms about the match itself? And I don't know, like, I think that there is a very legitimate disconnect there, and it goes beyond just, you know, kayfabe, where like he's taking all of this offense on his neck. Like, that wheelbarrow suplex spot that he just took full on his upper back and neck, like, I cringed that he even would be down to take that, because think back to, I mean, JT made the Shawn Michaels comparison. Shawn Michaels got thrown out of the ring in a match against The Undertaker, grazed his back, the small of his back, against a casket before he'd had any kind of back surgery or back problems or much to speak of, and like, that was it for him for the next 4 years, you know? And for Tommaso Ciampa, after having neck fusion surgery, to take spots like this, I'm like, oh my God. I fear for his well-being, legitimately.
Yeah.
But just getting back to the match and for what it was, I think if you are going to emphasize that as much as you are, then yes, have it play into the finish. Don't
do this weird swervy stuff that they did with Gargano coming out. Sure, have the Undisputed interfere. Like, they come out, they hit the high-low, Ciampa survives that. In a lot of ways, this match mirrored that Johnny Gargano title win, and I think by design, at the New York TakeOver last year. And they're kind of going for that, but they wanted to pull the rug out from under Ciampa here with his loss and Gargano being such a big part of that. But I think you can accomplish that without telling the story of having all of this emphasis and this story of Cole's offense being on Ciampa's neck here. I think it's unfortunate that the Canadian Destroyer is basically a transition move.
Oh.
It, which, I mean, can't really be helped at this point, I guess. It just,
well, let's stop doing it. Like, give me a, yeah, you know, take some time off from it. Take some time off.
I agree. I think they need to chill on that move. Hitting it on the outside. I mean, we've seen that spot before. Like you said, we saw it in the Cole Gargano match, and Johnny basically no-sold it, not quite to the extent that Ciampa did here, but I totally agree. He no-sold that move, and that was one that certainly gave me pause. Yeah, so I like, as much as I can kind of critique the psychology, it's sort of getting away from the way that I watch wrestling nowadays. Right. I'm more in that, was the character work there? And at the end of the day, what I want to see is drama and to really feel something and to bite on pinfalls and false finishes. And it did give me that. So I guess as a compromise, I'm not going to go 5 stars, but I am going to go 4.75. I like this match a whole lot. I don't think it's perfect, but I'm more in Jenny's camp at the end of the day.
Did you just talk yourself out of the 5, or did somebody else talk you out? Or was that your initial? Out of it.
I would say knee-jerk, if you asked me right after the bell, what would I give this? I would give a very questioning 5 stars. that was where I was at. But I was like, I want to say 5, but I don't really think it's 5. Like, as soon as I rewatch this, I'm going to say, nah, it wasn't 5.
I think the other issue, too, is, like, I'm kind of done with Ciampa versus Gargano. Like, either move one of them away, like, do something.
Okay.
So I would have been happy if he actually just – I would have been happier if he helped him win. Or if he helped him and he lost. Whatever. Like, I didn't need the turn, the confusing turn again. And, like, I know Gargano has – been a good heel, like in the Indies, and I'm sure he'd be fine. It just didn't feel like the time to do it. I don't know. I would have preferred maybe the accidental, you know, if we had to get something, the accidental Slater revealed as real, like the old first Paul Bearer, not the second Paul Bearer. Like, give me that, you know, like where he goes to hit him and maybe hits Ciampa's neck by accident. Something along those lines, versus like the outright turn, which...
So why don't we talk about that for a second? Yeah.
It seemed a little lazy to me. That was my biggest problem with it. It's kind of like... NXT is usually so much better at that with, like, more long-term storytelling. It seemed like they just kind of throw the, like, it's like they know it's evergreen. That they can just, like, well, you know, Ciampa and Gargano, you know, they're always back and forth. Like, they can just throw it out whenever they want, which NXT is usually so much better at building things and making everything seem like it has a purpose and not seeming just thrown together. Like, it has a plan, and it kind of just seemed like they just threw out the, let's do Ciampa Gargano again. You know, it seemed a little lazy, which is a little disappointing from NXT.
Yeah, especially with the roster they got. Especially with the depth they have. It's like, why do we have to go back to this again?
I don't know, and I guess this is part of the character work that I was alluding to. I don't know if they necessarily are going to go directly back to that well. I think this was... The storyline is not that Gargano had this premeditated plan to screw his former partner over. I think it's he came out and seeing that Ciampa had basically overcome the odds, was going for the title and going to use that to gain an advantage and presumably win the match. Like, I think the idea they're trying to get across, and you can argue how effectively they did this, is that something kind of snapped in him.
That's
where
the way I took it.
I don't think they got that across.
No, it looked like a spontaneous decision on Johnny's part for me.
I thought so too.
I think he needed a little more movement. Like if he came in there, I don't know. I don't need a beat in my head, but maybe because I was not as close to the week to week for this stuff. But I didn't think it was that obvious that he decided in the moment that he wasn't going to help him. Like,
and
that's still a face thing. Like he's standing up for good. Like they didn't tell me why he did it. You know, was it because he didn't want to help Ciampa cheat and become what he'd been, or is he trying to screw him? Like none of that was clear to me.
It's not clear to me either, but
they may want it to be ambiguous. Right. Where
that's fine.
Like too. In the moment, like he snapped in all the history, which makes a lot of sense. These two have a ton of history. Comes back and he decides right then and there, no, anyone is better than Tommaso Ciampa being the NXT champion. Mm-hmm. And for all intents and purposes, he's still a face, but he has this blind spot when it comes to Ciampa. And that's why I think that the Tampa takeover is going to be a four-way, where you can sort of, in that type of setting, you can lean more into these ambiguities surrounding characters, where it's not clear heel and face lines necessarily. I think that's going to be not a straight-up, you know, Gargano-Ciampa rematch or number one contender situation. I think it's going to be the two of them versus Cole and versus probably Baylor.
Yeah, I think a four-way makes sense. I'd prefer that versus, like, I don't know if I want to see Gargano-Ciampa again.
absolutely.
I think I've seen it, like, three times in person. I'm good.
I think they get that. I think that there was an opportunity to do that last year before Ciampa went out with the injury, and that was going to be the end of it. And now they're sort of acknowledging that there's this unfinished business, but you don't want to see just that straight one-on-one again. Like, that time has passed. So if they're smart, which I think they are, and I think they will be, they're just going to do it. They're going to do a triple threat, and that'll be the blow off for the two of them. Mm-hmm. And the title, I think the title goes back to Ciampa, and maybe they do a singles thing with him and Finn, you know, mm-hmm. later in the year.
Okay. All that being said, let's do some quick awards. Like we'd like to do. Match of the night for me, Adam Cole versus Tommaso Ciampa. Tim.
Yeah, I'm going to back you up on that.
Jake.
Broserweights.
Justin.
Yeah, I'm with Jake. Broserweights.
All right. Well, that's not
Split.
Bad.
Split. Yeah, I like it.
I like it. MVP. I'm giving it to Bianca. I thought she was outstanding. Tim.
MVP. I think I'm going to go Keith Lee, actually.
I like that.
Just because he showed a lot of fire in that opener. Mm. And there's greater things to come for him. It's great, just such a solid title defense. And, yeah. I think he gave me exactly what I wanted to see tonight and left me begging for more.
Mm, hot. Jake?
This is tough. I'll go Rhea just because she seemed like a star and she had a great match. She's a good champion. Mm-hmm. So I'll go Rhea. It's kind of tough to pick MVP on these shows.
It is.
It's not like one person or something is like, you never get the sense that, like, one person's carrying everything. But, yeah, I'll go Rhea.
Justin?
Keith Lee.
Okay. Moment of the night? I'm going to go with the Broserweights win. That got a huge pop, and I was shocked. Tim?
Yeah, I like that title win. I mean, it's hard to go with anything when you've got a big title change like that pops the crowd so much. So that's an easy one for me.
Jake?
I will third that. Broserweights win.
Yay, Justin?
Yeah, that was the best moment.
Sweet. All right. Overall, out of 10.
We didn't do LVP. Johnny Gargano. LVP.
Okay. shit. I don't know. I know who you want to pick, but.
The Gargano Award. That's what I'm going to
call it.
Fuck shit. Fuck
that. God, that's fucking hard.
I don't have one.
I don't either. I can't.
Sam Roberts, I mean.
Right? I literally, I can't.
Raquel Gonzalez.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yes, okay. I love you for that.
I don't know. I don't even have anything against her.
It's fuck her. Whatever. Fuck Jake.
I'll go Raquel.
Yes.
Sure, why not? She can be the scapegoat.
Not in my world.
So you're going Johnny.
You can look at his hands and wonder why he's the LVP on tonight, but
He didn't do that in this match. You have to concede that much.
He was fine. He was in the most disappointing match for me and the worst ending of any match on the show. So that's him. Okay.
All right.
Now can I do 10?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going 10 out of 10. I am. Fucking 10. Jake?
I'm not going 10 out of 10, but despite the criticisms I did have a 5-star match, and I think I bottomed at 3 3/4, which is still pretty damn good.
So, we got excited for a second.
I'm going 10 out of 10.
So I think I'm going to go 9 out of 10, because it was still, I thought, an awesome show, and that tag match is amazing.
Yep. Tim?
Well, no bottoming. This show was tops.
Top only.
All tops. Yeah, it was. I guess I won't give it a 10. I won't be that controversial, but I'll give it an easy 9. Kind of leaning 9.5.
I'll take it easy 9 any day.
That was my nickname. That's my nickname in college.
Easy 9. Lean a 9.5, but I'll go 9.
Justin?
So I was going to go 8.25, but I'll give a bump for the crowd because they were great pretty much all night. So 8.5 out of 10 for me.
8.5. Respectable, I guess.
I think it's a great takeover. I don't think it's in the top tier. Like I don't know. I just, the end of the main event was shaky, and I didn't like Balor. I mean, even though I still gave it 3.5, which is a good grade, wasn't crazy about that Balor one. To me, New Orleans like is much better than this show. And I saw people talking, is this the best? Which I disagree with. I'd have to look at other ones to see how they stack up. But New Orleans to me is still the best that they've done.
This is weird to me because everyone going into the show said, wow, this really looks like a blowaway on paper. And it did. You look at this card, and I mean, there's no filler.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, they could have easily added matches to the show. We could have seen Dream Strong, which it was weird that on the go-home show for this on NXT, like they spent a lot of time building that feud just to say they're going to have a match next week. And it's like, well, fine. I'm sure it's going to be a great match next week on free TV, but why even give them any time on the go home show for a takeover? I don't know. So they could have done that here, and that would have been spectacular. They could have done a cruiserweight match. They could have done Devlin versus Garza or Swerve or God only knows. Like, could have easily put together just a 4-star work rate classic with Jordan and Jordan Devlin and anybody. And I think that speaks to where NXT is right now. And kind of a little bit how spoiled we are right now, where it's just, you almost don't want to have too many great matches because it's like, here's a great match, here's a great match, here's a great match. Was this match better than that other great match we saw? Just, I don't know. There's so much talk around, you don't want to burn out the crowd, and
And these shows are so tight, and I think you want to keep it
that way. These shows are so tight, yeah, and you want to keep it that way. But I also just, I don't know, if they had just given us, like, eight crazy, like, four-star baseline work rate classics, am I really going to bitch about that? Like, how can I really to some of the shit we've seen before? I don't know. We're in that weird place, I think. And I don't think that this fell short of expectations at all. So you go into it, you see this great show on paper, all the matches deliver, and somehow does it feel still less than the sum of its parts? To me, not really. But I still don't want to give it a 10. So maybe I'm just that entitled wrestling fan.
So bougie, Tim.
Spoiled for choices and spoiled for great wrestling. I don't know. Yeah.
Any
I do think it's a good
good
return to form, because our last show was kind of Worlds Collide was kind of an experimental kind of thing, which was a little bit. It was a good show, but I don't think it was quite like TakeOver level. And so it was good that they came out with came back with another great TakeOver. Not that that show was bad, but.
And War Games was a little bit like, you had two big multi-person matches and some stuff in between, but still wasn't a traditional TakeOver. Because War Games is not a traditional type of show. So, I mean, it's really the first quote-unquote proper TakeOver show that we've had since, what, August? And, yeah, it was a return to form.
A real TakeOver.
A real TakeOver with real matches.
All right, have we said everything that we're going to say about TakeOver?
Yes, let's not go too long, like some of the matches we saw tonight.
Yeah. We could have a couple false finishes here. Mm-mm. Keep it going? No.
Okay. Nope. Finish strong.
All right. Finish strong. Well, I'm at Jenny Position on Twitter and on my Facebook page. So check those both out. I'm not going to pimp any of my shows, but y'all can if you want to. Tim?
Follow me on Twitter. I am at Psyche68, C-Y-K-E-6-8. I do a lot of shows, so check them out if you're interested in that kind of content.
Jake.
Jim Bly, Jake, PTBNXT, new episode coming soon. Mm-hmm. That's all I got.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Justin.
Go to iTunes or any podcast, search Place to Be Nation Wrestling, hit subscribe, press Place to Be Nation Pop, hit subscribe, and you can hear me. And Jenny Position, subscribe to that zone there too.
There you go. All right, that's it. We're done. Takeover accomplished.
We're taking over.
Only real matches and considerations.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.